Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Today, we have Dre Baldwin on the show. He's a pro basketball player and coach, and we don't talk about basketball too much in this episode. He's got a great book called Work on Your Game and General Coaching World, where he teaches people how to improve themselves. And he's been very willing to kind of talk about divisive things. And so we spend a good time talking about the election and sort of things that he's said that kind of get people annoyed, even though he thinks they're sort of true. We go into Black Lives Matter. Dre is black, in case you hadn't guessed. And dating women as a black guy, as a dating white women, in general, just lots of interesting debatable topics. So it's a really interesting episode, especially with the whole election stuff coming up and the general tearing apart of America that seems to be going on, and some big insights. We do go into basketball and coaching and such in another interview, but not today. So you can wait for that. Now you can enjoy hearing about what Dre thinks about Donald Trump and the election and the world at large. Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Success isn't a goal, it's a journey. I interview the most incredible humans to keep your mind optimized for growth.
Pleasure to have you on the Growth Mindset Podcast today. Were you like super into any like subjects besides sport? Did you ever think that I'm gonna be an astronaut, or I want to be like an inventor, or was it always like you wanted to be a sport? Because I mean, obviously you clearly didn't want to be like a basketball player when you were seven, because you weren't even playing it,
right? So growing up, we had all the normal kid dreams: astronaut, president of the United States, football player, firefighter, police officer, all the things kids wanted to be growing up in the, I'm 38, so late 80s, early 90s, this is the kind of dreams the kids had. Then by the time I was a teen, that's when I really started to get into sports. But as far as to answer your question directly, I was always into reading, and eventually that became writing. And my mom is an educator, so I have a sister who's a year older than me. She had us into reading from a very young age. Before we even went to school, we knew how to read, so we were, I guess you could say, a little bit advanced when it came to that. So once I discovered personal development, I knew that that was something that really spoke to me. And this was in college when I first got introduced to it. I knew there were some principles inside of me that I had already been thinking, but I couldn't articulate them. I couldn't language them. And so I read personal development. I said, yes, this is exactly the kind of stuff that I'm into. And I was introduced to just entrepreneurship when I read this book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. This is around 2001. Now, I had never been taught the concepts of business or entrepreneurship, because everyone around me growing up, they had regular jobs. So they talked about work as if it was a necessary evil. They were not excited about going to work. They talked about their work as if I have to go to work. Not I get to go to work, but I have to. So they didn't enjoy it. My mom, I remember she would come home every day, get on the phone with whoever she was talking to, and complain about our coworkers every day. So she didn't really enjoy work. And then I'm looking at them, all the adults around me, like, okay, so I'm going to finish school so I can go and live like these people live. They are never excited about work. They're not excited about the job. They don't like the people they work with. They don't ever have any money. All right, I don't want to do this. I don't want to live this life. So it was already in my head once my basketball career was done, because by that point, I'd already decided I was going to play sports. But once basketball was done, I knew I'd be going into entrepreneurship, because the last thing I wanted to do was live the life of the adults that I saw around me. So to answer your question, in college, I majored in business. I do have a business degree from Penn State University, even though nothing that I learned in college taught me a single thing that I'm using in business today. Not one thing, except maybe following up. When I took my internship, the internship coordinator told us about when you go to a job interview, make sure you follow up, leave a note, and thank them for having an interview. That's the only thing that I learned in college that I still use to this day. And I tell people, when people ever ask me what did I major in college, I tell them, my degree says business, but my actual major was basketball and socializing. That's what I majored in. And those are the things that really helped me in my day-to-day life now, is my social skills, and the fact that I play sports helped me have a career in sports. So to answer your question, that's what I majored in.
That's cool. Yeah, I've always found the idea of a business degree kind of odd when you're like, it's just so different compared to actually doing it. Some people want to do it, and some people kind of you're just never going to, it doesn't matter how much studying you do, it's not like you're never going to be an entrepreneur kind of thing. This seems a really odd thing to study, whereas, yeah, other things, like if you study it, it makes more sense at least. But to be fair, most people that studied my science degree doing biology didn't end up doing biology, so perhaps it doesn't really matter that much. But it seems like a degree is an opportunity to learn something that you can just be interested in, and you may as well do something a bit more interesting. I feel like science was like a super useful degree in terms of how to look at the world, like scientifically. And in fact, it's actually almost more useful for business in terms of you learn to question your assumptions. And like, you can't be a scientist if you just expect that, like, okay, I have a theory of how things will work. And if you don't like validate it, you're not going to be a good scientist. And that's what business is. It's like, it's, you have theories of how something should work and what will sell, what people will like. And then you have to validate it first, or otherwise you lose all your money and you go out of business. Science is business, technically speaking.
Right. Now you understand that, Sam, but how did you learn to even know what you just said?
Probably from telling people why I understand business, having studied science. Some people just don't make the connections between different things so much, as in like I kind of given like a whole speech to like my old biology department of like why it's so good for studying business, and they were like, what? And you're like, but it's obvious to me.
Right, that right there, what you just said there was the connection between things. That's really the key, is the connection between stuff. It's not knowing one thing, it's being able to connect what you learned in science and translating it into business, or understanding, uncovering how some elements of science actually help you in business. But like you said, you told your biology department that none of them had ever even thought of it. It had never crossed their mind. And it happens with people all the time. They go to school, study business because they think that's going to help them become an entrepreneur, when it actually just helps you become an employee at somebody else's company. That's really what studying business does for you. Or it helps you think that you know something because you sat in school for 4 years and you read all these books, but you don't actually know anything because you haven't done anything. And that's what I tell people all the time, is you don't know it till you've done it. Reading it doesn't mean you know them. You have to actually be out there, you know, 10 toes deep, as we say, in the trenches doing those things. But the connections, I think that's the key thing right there, is being able to connect one concept that's supposed to work just over in this vertical, but take that same concept and use it over here and make sense of it. That's a key skill right there, because that's what makes a person unique. Because if all you know is the same thing everybody else knows, well, what do we need you for? You're a commodity.
Which I guess is like where your whole business has come from now, is in like, you've learned how to master basketball and improving your game there, but like then translating that for people to improve their game in anything kind of thing.
Right. That, and again, combining it with some personality. I mean, my brand is based on me as a person, as the attractive character. So, I mean, there are a lot of athletes who play sports and then they go into, I guess, what you want to call motivational speaking and things like that. A lot of those guys and girls, a lot of them are kind of cheesy. I mean, they don't really have anything unique. There's no unique angle to what they talk about, and they all kind of sound the same. I feel like I'm a little bit different.
What's your unique angle then?
My unique angle, first of all, is I'm Black. Second of all, if you look around the thought leadership world, it's mostly middle-aged white men. So the thought leadership world is mostly middle-aged white men. That is writing books, podcasting, professional speaking, all of those areas. So that's one thing. And secondly, is just that the way that I communicate when I'm in my own material is that I just tell people things straight. I'm not looking for like SEO points. I'm not trying to win people over. I just tell people straight exactly how I am and how I think. And the uniqueness with me is that, and this is what my audience tells me, is that, Trey, I don't always agree with everything that you say, but the fact that you are able to build a case for why you think the way that you think, people can respect it. So I can say something that can really go completely against what one of my readers or listeners believes, but they're not going to like unsubscribe or unfollow me because I said it, because I build my argument for why I'm saying it. So even when they disagree, they can respect it. And that's something that I think is really, really missing in the world today, especially in the United States. Now, we got an election coming up next week. It's many topics that people don't want to talk about because they're afraid of pissing people off. But I'll talk about those topics, but in a way that even if you disagree with me, you're not going to be angry. You know what I'm saying? And that's a communication skill that many people either they don't have or they're just choosing not to use it. I don't know which one it is.
Can you sort of be specific about some things where you talk about something and how you talk about it that make it relatable?
All right, so we got an election coming up on Tuesday. You got Donald Trump against Joe Biden, and nobody wants to discuss it because they're afraid of saying something's going to piss somebody off. And here's something that I did. I'll give you an example of something that I did that 99% of people couldn't do. I did a video and I said, here's the reasons why Trump is going to win the election. And I listed out all the reasons why he's going to win. And I put the video on YouTube. And then a couple of weeks later, I did another video. I said, here's all the reasons why Biden's going to win. And I listed all the reasons why he was going to win. And I put that one up on YouTube. Most people couldn't make the argument for both sides because they are so emotionally engaged in either being against this guy or against that guy. that they could never even bring themselves to even fathom saying anything positive about one or the other. I'll tell you something else. A friend of mine, they follow me on Instagram, and I talk about this stuff on my like Instagram stories and my live streams and things like that. She said she heard me talking about the election things, but because of the fact that I was being objective, I wasn't bashing either candidate, and she wasn't sure which side I was on. She was trying to figure it out, and I'm like, I'm not on either side. I'm just telling everyone objectively what I see. And right now, people have a really hard time being objective, especially on topics of like politics or topics of race, because the people get so emotionally engaged in this stuff is that people can't really have an objective conversation about these topics.
Yeah, you're always going to bring all your own like prejudices, and you don't really kind of have like the open mind to like things, which is hard with Trump and social media. And like, you're just in a bubble of like your own world of like, you're only hearing the same thoughts, and you just think like, it seems that mental that someone could think something different to you when all you've seen is just like how much of an idiot Trump is and how great Biden is. You're just like, someone must be like insanely retarded to like have like a different view to yours, when actually like they've had a completely different experience. They've seen like how Trump's been saving the common worker and how Biden's gonna like make them pay more taxes and like he's gonna be a terrible person, and they're like, what the hell are you trying to do? You're trying to ruin our country, like letting this weird old man in. People just can't see like from each other's empathetic viewpoint kind of thing.
Right, and what causes it is the media has done this. Everybody's chose a side. So you know whichever network you listen to, you know what side of the story you're going to get. So if you read the New York Times or you watch CNN, anything Trump does, they're going to find a way to make it look terrible. And anything Biden does, they're going to put a positive spin on it. And then if you watch Fox, they're going to tell you what Trump did is great. Now he's going to win. So depending on who you follow online these days, you think it's either going to be a landslide for Trump or a landslide for Biden, but nobody's saying it's going to be close. It's just like nobody can be objective about it.
So what's your objective prediction then?
My objective prediction is it's damn near impossible to tell, because like I just said, half the people are telling you one thing, half the people telling you another. Here's one thing that I do project is that neither candidate is going to admit that they lost. That by this time next week, we will not know who won. Yeah, that's what my prediction, that we won't even know who won by next Wednesday.
Yeah, it's going to be a bright mess if Trump does have to leave and he's just like, no,
I think we might have civil war in America. I'm joking, but it might get ugly out here.
Yeah. What were the reasons that you gave that Trump will win?
Number one is that he has fans and that Biden doesn't have any fans. Biden has Trump haters. People are going to vote for Biden because they hate Trump, not because they like Biden. So the number one thing with Trump is that every time the media talks bad about him, and most of the media talks bad about him, and they take anything that happens to or around him, they put a negative spin on it. And to the point that a lot of people don't even realize that they're getting skewed information. So they think what they're getting is factual information. And if you hear the same thing over and over again, you start to believe that it must be true, because you're getting it from all these reputable sources, allegedly, like CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post. These are supposed to be reputable news sources, but they skew the information to make this guy look bad. And then they'll argue with you and they'll give you links to the New York Times. I'm like, all right, do you understand where you're getting that information from? So number one thing is that every time the media tries to make him look worse by trying to make him look terrible because of it, that only makes his fan base even more fervent. They're like, okay, look at how they're doing this again. That only makes the people who support him become even stronger supporters, because it's like the us versus them dynamic. So I believe on November 3rd, when they have this election, that his supporters are going to come out in full force. And they're going to come out strong. And I think a lot of people have said, even when I put out the Trump video, they were like, no, Dre, you're wrong. A lot of people hate Trump because he did, and they start listing all the things he's done wrong, all his crimes. And I'm like, y'all got to understand that there's a whole audience of people who love this guy, who don't get on social media and argue with people all day. They're going to vote. Y'all didn't learn in 2016? Like, they exist. I'll even tell you how I came to even think this way. 2016, I voted for Hillary Clinton, and I thought there was no way Trump could win because I was in the bubble. Everything I heard was, there's no way he's going to win. He's a clown. This is going to be a landslide. He's going to lose, and then he's going to go write a book about it, and he'll go back to doing reality TV, forget Trump. And then he won. And the next day, I was like, how the hell did he win? Like, I consider myself to be pretty smart. I'm like, how did he win? All the information that I took in said he was not going to win. It wasn't even going to be close, and he won. And it led me to look in the mirrors, and I had to say to myself, okay, I'm the one who's in a bubble. Because if all I thought, there was no way he was going to win, and then damn near half the country voted for him, that means I am only seeing half the information. And all those people who voted for him, they're just terrible people, right? And here's the logical way that I look at it. There's no way that 60 million people can all be idiots. All right, that's impossible. Like, out of 60 million people who support this guy, some of these people are smart. Some of them went to college. Some of them own businesses. Some of them are just as successful as people who hate the guy. So there's no way that everybody can be an idiot. So, which means I wanted to find out, why did people support? Because I didn't think it was logical. But it turns out, again, I was the fool. You know, and a lot of times when you're in a bubble of information, you think everybody outside of the bubble is the idiot, but the idiot might be you. And I just opened my mind to the fact that maybe I was the one who lacked the information. So I just tried to open myself up to see, let me get both sides of this. So I follow people on social media who love Trump. I follow people who hate him. And everything he does, you get that love side, you get the hate side, and you'll see it back-to-back posts. And somebody making what happened look good and somebody trying to make it look bad. And it's like entertaining, but I can look at it that way because I'm not emotionally, you know, bought into either candidate or any political party or anything like that. Whereas most people.
Yeah, it's awesome. I had the exact same thing after Brexit where I was like, I just had no clue how Brexit could have happened. Like nothing in my feed could have told me that. And yeah, so it's been really fun since I've been on purposely like following different things where you like, you'll see like the same 40 seconds worth of like a clip, but like you'll see like the start 5 seconds is different and like an end 5 seconds is different. And like it'd be Jeremy Corbyn saying the same thing, but one would be like, oh, Jeremy Corbyn absolutely kills it. And the other one's like, Jeremy Corbyn has no chance. What an idiot, shambles of a speech. And you're like, it's the same bloody video clip, but yeah, like it's still interpreted like completely different.
Take it out of context. That's what happens on the internet these days. Somebody's going to take this conversation out of context.
Yeah. Definitely. I was, could come up with some bad headlines, but that's not. But yeah, that's something that with my business, I was telling you about like Syncify, where we're letting people like engage with each other, that I've been quite worried about, because if people are just following their friends and like listening to stuff together and seeing what their friends listen to, it could be very easy to just end up in sort of holes of just the same communities. So we're kind of going to have like a score for like sort of diversity of content and like telling you what kind of content is that you're listening to and sort of gamifying being able to listen to opposite views. So if you listen to like some newscast that's very one way, we'll kind of like show you, okay, well this is like the opposite opinion, or like this is why you probably won't understand like the future if you only listen to this kind of thing, and sort of helping people be more rounded and like introducing them to like the content that their friends listen to that's sort of different to theirs, so they can kind of like actually engage in these conversations without it like turning into a mess, we're hoping.
Yeah, we need it.
Yeah, definitely. It's a hard one.
Join over 500,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional with BetterHelp. It's a sponsor of this podcast, and they're just really great, and hopefully it can help you with any of the problems that you have. I genuinely struggle from a diagnosed condition of needing too much adventure and thrill seeking. But during lockdown, this actually kind of came out in some weird ways. And sometimes when I'd be recording the podcast, I'd be talking to someone in the interview and I would just mute the sound on my headphones. So I'd have no idea what they were saying. And I'd just try and carry on with the interview and see if I could do it without anyone noticing. I have no idea why I did that. Yeah, there's something wrong with me. Hence why I needed counseling. BetterHelp really helped me find healthier ways to exist as a human in this crazy world. They assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. It's professional counseling done securely online with all types of counselors in different professions, and you can access it from anywhere in the world. It's really convenient. So yeah, this is a special offer for Growth Mindset Podcast listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/growthmindsetpodcast.
So anyway, enough about politics. Working on my game. Do you do any like relationship advice? How to work on like your relationship game? Does it translate to all things, or is it only business and like improvement and stuff?
In general, it's mostly about the individual person. Sometimes people will ask me about relationships, and it depends on the question that they ask. I can maybe offer them something. My lady, actually, she does relationship coaching, so she'll be a person who can answer the question better than I could, but it depends on what the question is.
Do you ever have like sessions where she's like, well, our relationship is going this sort of step, and we're doing this wrong, and I need you to be more like this because this is what my coaching thing says?
No, she doesn't do that. A good coach doesn't bring their coaching practice home.
Okay, so you never work on her game?
Not in that way. Not like we're coaching each other, no. That wouldn't work.
Okay, can you work on my podcasting game? Like, what am I doing wrong here?
We judge podcasts by the results of the audience. We let the consumers decide whether your podcast is good or bad, right or wrong. So are you getting the kind of results you want from your audience?
Can't you make it better in the moment? Because if I've got to edit this afterwards, what do you think I could do right now to make the podcast better?
Ask me a question that's going to get me to talk about something that's different from what any of your other guests talk about.
So we probably can't talk about mindsets.
What about relationships and dating? Why don't you ask about relationships?
How about you growing up as like a black guy? What was it like in terms of dating? Did you kind of think of like white women as like a trophy and stuff? Because that's something I've never spoken to someone about.
Okay, this is a perfect question because you didn't even know my girlfriend's from Europe. So she is white. As a matter of fact, when this is over, Sam, you go on YouTube, we have several videos with me and her talking about interracial dating on YouTube. And you know, some of them really piss people off. People get really mad at some of the things we talk about. But anyway, what was it like for me? So I grew up from Philadelphia, and I'm from the city inside of Philadelphia. So I was mostly around black people all my life up until in middle school. I went to like a magnet school. They have magnet schools where you're at, where it's like you go to a school that's not in your neighborhood because it's like a better school for the best student. I went to that kind of school in for fifth through eighth grade. And it was a mix. It was white kids and black kids, like half and half. Then in high school, it was mostly black. And then in college, I went to Penn State. Now, Penn State is mostly white. You know, Penn State's probably maybe 10% black. So it's white girls all over the place. So did we look at them as a trophy? No, because when you're in that environment, there's white girls everywhere. So if you are a black guy and you're like, I don't date white girls, then why would you even be going to that school? You might as well have went to an all-black school if you're not going to date white girls. Why even do it? I didn't look at a white girl any different than I looked at a black girl. I just looked at girls are girls. You know, I'm a heterosexual male, but you're interested in what you're interested in. If I see a black girl that I like, I'm going to talk to her. If I see a white girl I like, I'm going to talk to her. If I see an Asian girl, a European girl, as long as we can communicate, I'm open to all possibilities. That's the way that I looked at life. I didn't have any taboos around no white girl, black girl, things like that. And even though I'm from a neighborhood that is 99% black, I knew I always wanted to get out of that neighborhood and see the rest of the world because all the adults that I saw growing up, they grew up, they went to work, they didn't really enjoy their jobs, didn't have any money, they didn't seem excited about their careers. Like, I don't want to stay here and do what they do. I wanted to get out and see the rest of the world. So that's why, you know, I live in Miami now. I need to get out of Philadelphia and see what the rest of the world was like.
Growing up as a white person, it felt like most media was sort of had a white focus. Is that just because it was in my world, or did you feel like most media was more like white?
Yeah, it's still like that. Yeah, most media is still white. I mean, if you look up a picture of you online and you look up, let me see, a model, just Google a model, it's going to be a bunch of white females. That's just how it is. I mean, America at least, and I suppose maybe Europe as well, is majority white. I mean, America is only maybe 13% black as it is right now, and there's a little bit more percentage, I think, Hispanic. But even down here in Miami where I live, the Hispanics look like white people. You can't really tell who's Hispanic and who's white until you hear them talk, because the Hispanics are very fair skinned. Even my lady, she could pass for just a white American or a Hispanic until you hear her speak, then you might realize, all right, maybe she's not from America, but they all look white to me. And where I come from, the black people, they're not cultured, so they call anybody who's not brown, you're white. You're either black or you're white. But when you get out into the world and you see more people, and I mean, I've traveled through different countries playing basketball, so I have more culture. But I have a lot of friends who are from all over the place. So to answer your question, yes, the culture is very white, but I mean, it's mostly white people, so that's just what it is. But nowadays, a lot of black and brown people are making noise about that. You know, the whole social justice movement is about, well, we need more black representation and more black people need to get in roles in these movies and TV shows and things like that. And that's fine. I mean, if that's what people want, and companies are kind of getting bullied into having to do it right now, I think they're getting bullied into having to make certain changes because of the groundswell of energy that's been going on in America over the last 6 or 7 months. Who knows if it's going to last? We'll see.
Yeah. Do you have any divisive opinions on that?
I have shared plenty over the summer. As far as the concept of equality, people talk about racial inequality. And the average white family has this much money, and the average black family has this much money. So there's a gap in wealth, right? Which means, and this, the conclusion that people draw from that is, that must mean that America is racist, or this is proof of systemic racism, or other things that people say. There's racial inequality. We need to fight this inequality. But that's not always the case. You know, if two different people have two completely different outcomes, it doesn't necessarily mean that the system is unfair. It depends on a lot of factors, right? Because, I mean, Sam, you went to school. Are there other people who went to school with you who don't own businesses to this day? And they're not doing great? They're not doing too well? And life may be kicking their ass right now, but they went to the same school you went to. So does that mean that you cheated and that the system worked against them? No. It might just mean that you made decisions that are different from the decisions that they made. And this is why the outcomes are different. And me as well. I mean, I play sports. There are kids I play sports with when I was 16 who did not go to college, didn't play in the pros. I went to college, I played in the pros. Does it mean that the system benefited me and it hated on them? Of course not. It means we made different decisions. Maybe we had different sets of skills. And the other thing is, everybody's not the same. I mean, you can't manufacture equality. So when people talk about the differences between races, they say, well, white people have this, black people have this, or this person got this outcome, this person got this outcome. Well, everybody's not the same. I mean, I'm 6 feet, 4 inches tall, 193 centimeters. So if somebody's 165 centimeters, they're probably not going to become a basketball player. That's just the way it is. It's not my fault. I probably couldn't get a science degree because I wouldn't apply myself and do the work. It's just how it is. And not everybody is the same. So when there are inequalities in results between people, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's something wrong with the system. Sometimes it might just mean that people did things differently.
Yeah, 100%. And also what we're alluding to earlier with the whole social media content sort of windows, and there's more white guys that have been killed by police than there are black guys. Which, but that's not all over your social media channel, like terrifying you about like how the white police are only going to kill you because you're a white guy. So you're not really so scared.
Yeah, they don't make noise about that. And well, the thing is, the way somebody will combat that, like if I was playing devil's advocate, Sam, I'd say, well, there are way more white guys in America. So of course, more white guys got killed. But the thing is, when a black person gets killed by another black person, that doesn't make the news either. And that's one of the challenges that I've had with the whole social justice movement is that there's no news when black on black crime occurs. It's only news when a white person is to blame for the death of a black person. And it bothers me because a dead body's a dead body. You don't want anybody to die if they didn't need to. So when a black kid gets killed by a stray bullet that was shot from a gun of a black person, but it doesn't become news. But then when a white cop does something, every black person in America has to make noise about it and hashtag and no protest and walking out of basketball games and all of this. I'm like, oh, y'all are not making the same news for other people who die. It's like you're having placing different levels of value on different lives depending on who's to blame. And that's a big challenge of the whole social justice movement, but nobody wants to address that. If you bring that up, people just say, well, you're going against the program. If I say it, people get mad at me because I'm black and I'm supposed to be supporting. If you were to say that, people would say you're racist, right? And that would be it. So that's where we're at right now. So who knows where this is going
to
go?
Yeah, it's confusing. As in, I definitely want the world to be more equal and for everyone to have like proper opportunities, and like there's no room anywhere for like racism. But also, I don't want people to kind of get like the wrong opinion of how the actual world is and to sort of feel like they're more endangered than they are, or to do things out of fear that aren't actually real. Like, so as in, people should just be more aware of the actual realities kind of thing.
So what would that require, Sam? That would require somebody who is capable of thinking, somebody who can be objective, somebody who can detach from their emotions, somebody who can look at things logically and rationally. And most people are a no on all of those points. So it's probably not going to happen. The objective stuff is boring compared to the slanted stuff is exciting. It gets people excited. It gives people something to talk about, but the truth is usually not very exciting. Right, the truth is somewhere in between the extremes. It doesn't get people excited because it's a little bit of both sides and people aren't interested in that. They ignore it. You give people truth, they ignore it.
Sounds a bit odd in this one, but like there's no real kind of black and white to most things. It's usually like kind of something in the middle. It's not always gray. It's like a sort of, it's like a pattern of the two and things, but then people can't be bothered to like work it out or see it for what it is. They're just like, oh, it must be that. And so it's bad and I'll label it.
Exactly. It's funny that you say that because I've said almost those exact words in the last couple of weeks. I talked about that. It's usually not black and white. It's usually somewhere in the gray. But if you tell people something that's gray, again, they're so used to something that is sensational that they ignore it. It's like they don't even notice it. You have to be sensational just to get people's attention these days. That's the challenge. And as far as what you said about racism, you know, racism is legal. And this is something that I told people maybe a year ago. This is before the social justice, all of that. I did a podcast episode and the title was Racism is Legal. Meaning if somebody wants to hate you because of the color of your skin, I'm not saying that is right. I'm saying that they are allowed to do it. It's not a crime to be racist. It's not a crime to hate black people if you're white. It's not a crime to hate white people if you're black. It's not against the law. So if somebody wants to be racist, you can't stop them. Now, racism is a way of thinking. You can't take somebody to court for being racist. So when people talk about racism as if it's some crime where they try to point out, oh, this person's racist, look what they did, or they try to out them or something. Well, nothing's going to happen to them. I mean, they might get fired from their job. But other than that, somebody could just come out and say, yeah, I'm racist. And what do you want to do? There's nothing you can do. So sometimes I think people are misplacing their energy on things that don't really matter. You don't want to try to focus on changing something that is impossible to be changed. But in America, one more thing I'm on this is we have these people, especially Black folks, that we call them race hustlers. So a race hustler is the Black person whose job it is to stir up this conflict between Black people and white people. So anytime something comes up where they can blame a white person and they can get a whole bunch of Black people mobilized to be mad at this white person, they do it. That's their whole business, is to just keep Black people mad at white people, and they're hustling. They're basically using the conflict of race to keep people excited in a negative way. And this is their whole business, and this is their relevance. They become relevant by continually getting people excited about race. They just keep amplifying it over and over again. It's almost like social media wants it because it keeps people coming on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook to talk about it when there's something that keeps people, you know, excited and angry. So that's the whole game right now. And it's making money for these companies. So I don't see it going away anytime soon.
Really annoying. Humans. Anyway, so what do you think in terms of your skills at like helping people improve? Do you ever talk about this? Is it mostly how to like train to be good at something, or do you ever kind of like go into like, okay, how do people really like fundamentally change their mindsets and sort of become like open-minded and this kind of stuff?
So when I'm talking, let's say if I was to do a live stream or a post on Instagram or a blog post, of course we may get a little bit granular, but my brand is based on four principles: discipline, confidence, mental toughness, and personal initiative. Of course we talk about those principles up top, those are the high level principles, but underneath those, now somebody may ask, okay, well, how do I do it? So then we have courses on, here's how you build discipline. Here's how you build your confidence. Here's how you enact mental toughness. Here's how you actually take initiative and get started doing things. And we get granular here as well, Sam. So if someone wants to know, hey, how do you write a book? I will do a workshop on here's how to write a book, or here's how to, you know, get yourself seen in the media. Here's how to put together your website. If you want to start a podcast, here's some reasons why you should have a podcast. Here's some reasons why you should not have a podcast. So everything that I've done, people will come to me and ask me, how did I do it? And I will make material, whether it's something free, something paid, where I actually talk about this is how you actually get it done. So we don't stop at just, you know, the woo-woo mindset stuff, because there's too many people doing that anyway, and a lot of them suck. But we want to give you step by step so you know exactly where to begin, what's the middle, and where do you end. And here's the result you want to have at the end. We put our brand behind making sure people get actual results. Even when we're dealing with mindset, where it is not like something you can hold in your hands, we still want to make sure we get people a result.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of that lately in terms of like working out what sort of my short-term goals are for the mission, where we're going, and well, for the company, and sort of being like, okay, this is what we need to hit by there. And then kind of like, okay, this is the end goal. Like, okay, so what's the middle process that we're doing? What do we need to start right now? And like really sort of tracing it back to tell like a full story, and so we can work out like our weekly KPIs, have like someone owning each part of the business and stuff. And it's kind of good. I feel like I'm starting to lose my voice from that people I'm talking to lately. I think one day last week I was just on the phone from like 8 a.m. until 10 p.m. And it's just like 14 hours. Like I had 1 hour break that was taken up with like a guy that was running a similar business who was just leaving and could be a potential CTO, and we're looking for a code. And it's like, well, that's like the most important call possibly all day. So I actually didn't have a single break. I'm just like, I'm an introvert. I didn't even speak until I was like 16.
Talking is more work than it looks like, right? When you talk all day, it's almost like working out.
Yeah, definitely. Not my strong point. Getting better at it. How about you? I mean, you're doing like calls all day today.
Yeah. So over the course of the day, especially like if I'm recording or something, because my show comes out every day. You know, so whenever I spend a whole day recording, it feels like you worked out. I'm more hungry. I get tired faster. I sleep better that night because I used up all my energy. So talking does take up a good amount of energy. But for me, like, for example, I'm talking to you right now, and then I got to get on a coaching call where I'm not speaking, I'm just listening. But I like the variety of people that I talk to. So it's always a different conversation. Like this conversation right here, nobody has asked me about these topics on video this year because nobody wants to talk about this stuff. I think you're comfortable talking about it because you're not from the USA. And nobody in America wants to talk about these things. I think they're afraid of pissing somebody off.
Oh, yeah, as in, well, for me on the talking thing, as in, if I'm being interviewed or something, it's just nice to say the thing, but like, when I'm doing sort of like 10 hours of calls with mentors, they're just all giving me like completely conflicting advice on what to do with your business, and it's all like really important stuff. You have any time to like process it? And I'm like, I'm the sort of introvert that like I need some time to myself to process everything. But like you're so worn out that you kind of fall asleep, but then you just wake up in the middle of the night, like start like actually thinking about everything, and so like my sleep's just gone to like shit because I haven't had any time to actually just sit and think, and it's just like all this torrent of information coming at me. It's a funny one.
What I try to do with that is block off the schedule so that these are the days where I'm available to get on the phone. But these days, I don't put anything on my schedule. I'm not doing any calls. I just need to do my thing.
That's a good tip. Okay, rounding up, what's one of your earliest ever memories?
Around 5 years old, when my mother noticed that I might have had some vision problems. So she took me to the eye doctor and she got me some glasses. So I used to wear glasses and then I got contact lenses. I wear corrective lenses to this day. That was one of the earliest memories, just remembering my mom taking me to the eye doctor because she noticed that might be something wrong with my eyes.
Did you actually like have a kind of bad eyesight and hadn't realized it? Because like, yeah, that's what you're used to in the world. And then like suddenly you're like, shit, I can see now. Or
yeah, I mean, I was like 5 years old, so I don't remember all that. But I just know that she noticed that I needed lenses. I think I was nearsighted. So I could see things when they were really close to me, but I couldn't see the further away. So I needed glasses for that.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it sounds like a kind of like a life-changing moment. Okay. Are there any questions that you have for me?
How long have you been doing your show?
3.5 years.
Why'd you start?
I started because mix of things. I kind of felt at the time that there was too many American podcasts and I wanted to hear some more British voices.
Yeah, there are too many American podcasts. You should start another one. So you got, there's still too many. What's the best thing you get out of the show?
Because a lot of what I did was just asking people questions and finding out how to do things. And I was like, well, this is what I'm doing. Like, why don't I just do this in a way that people can like see what I'm doing? And then they can ask me, how, like, then they know how I got to know this thing too. It was the fact that like, it's just a really good excuse to talk to people. So I'm already trying to improve by learning from these people. I can get hold of even more cool people and like have deeper conversations with them because if it's not just for me, it's for like my whole audience. So it's suddenly like, it just opens doors for you. And then I kind of wanted an audience for myself so that like whatever I wanted to then go and do would be easier to like get traction or kind of just make things. So it has really helped in that sense. Like I didn't really actually care about the money from doing it. It's more the ability to like just do things that I want to do. So it kind of just like aligned with a lot of that stuff. And like the challenge, because I wasn't so good at talking or like saying my thoughts. And I knew that I have lots of good ideas and like I'm a deep thinker, but I just wasn't so successful at always getting things to happen the way I wanted to or like explaining what I was thinking. So I thought it should help and push my boundaries on that.
So do you feel like you've gotten better?
Loads better. So I went from like being highly ineloquent, I'm still not perfect, but not good, to like this year where I gave a TED speech, I did stand-up comedy, like, and the TED speech came from me just sort of not having a podcast ready 1 week and just sort of speaking my mind for like 20 minutes. And like this, the stuff that came out got picked up by someone that wanted it to be a TED speech. So it was like, that's a significant improvement from where I was before, for sure. So I feel like it's been really helping on those things. And I've certainly got to talk to lots of cool people and I've got a bit of an audience. It's helped me. I mean, that's why I'm in Techstars now, is because like I knew the MD of Techstars because I'd interviewed him and some of like the other people that had been on here. And so when I came to him with the podcast idea that I thought could be scalable, he was like, yeah, I know Sam, he's a really reliable guy. He kind of knows the podcast industry. He's probably got a good idea for like this. He just kind of sold it to him pretty quickly. So if I hadn't have done it, I probably wouldn't be here right now.
Have you ever dated a black girl?
Yeah, my first ever girlfriend. But like, I'm not sure that really counts. We were like 6.
No, that doesn't count. Since you've been, let's say 18 and up.
Not like, depends on what you define as black, but like...
Brown skin.
Yeah, I would say like my girlfriends haven't been as diverse as I'd like them to be. That's a record.
You have a girlfriend right now?
No.
Okay.
Any black ladies out there, you know, single? I mean, have you dated a lot of white girls? Or
how many is that?
I don't know. 3? 10?
Yeah. Dated, not like they were my girlfriend, but you mean like going on a date or...
Yeah, I mean, how long have you been... Did you, like, do a lot of sleeping around during your basketball career? And when we say a lot, is this, like, kind of, like, new girl after each game or...
Not that much because you're in the same town, so it's not like you're going town to town. But you said more than 3? Yes. I dated more than 3 white girls? Yes. I went to Penn State for 4 years, so it's... Like I said, it's 90% white people, so yes, definitely more than 3.
Nice. Okay, well, I have to roll. But thank you so much for the interview.
Of course, man.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you have any questions, please reach out to me through the website at growthmindsetpodcast.com. I do love talking to listeners. You can support us on Patreon or by leaving a review on iTunes or telling a friend about us. But mostly, keep learning and keep growing.